Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners. Meeting will come to order. If you all put, if you have any cell phones or other PD devices, if you silence them now, it's not to disrupt the rest of the meeting. Appreciate it. And if you'd stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation,
moving along now to item number three. This is discussion, possible action, approval of the agenda for March the 21st, 2017. Are there any changes to be made to the today's agenda?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Can I get a motion for approval?
Just for the public comment?
There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Much better.
All right. Is there a public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, do you have a motion for approval?
I'll make a motion to approve today's agenda.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve today's agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number four, today's consent agenda. Any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, I have a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number five. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Now we start to the left-hand side of the building here. And Chief Deputy Dosen for the Sheriff's Office, anything today, Tom?
Nothing to report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Director of Security, Ms. Keener.
Nothing to say, thank you.
Thank you. Public Works Director, Jason Van Habel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Jason Van Havel, Public Works Director, for the record. Quick status on Six Mile Canyon on the road down there. We've made tremendous progress reconstructing the drainage damage down there. It's been armored very well. We have hundreds and hundreds of yards of riprap and very large rock down there to help protect the canyon for future incidents. As far as opening it up for the public, we're in the final stages of trying to finalize a project with NDOT, and if that's going to move forward, then I will be in position to be able to try to get the canyon open fairly quickly. If that is not able to move forward, then I'll have to wait a bit longer for the canyon to dry out so I can reconstruct a couple of key areas so that way they'll be in a position to be built to last better. And so let's keep our fingers crossed that that NDOT project is able to move forward. We've been able to direct some of our attention on the Loustown and Cartwright out in the Highlands with some of that drainage damage. We're able to get a lot of those shoulders reconstructed in such a way with riprap, so that way when we have a similar event, the shoulders should hold together, be able to maintain safety on those roads after similar kinds of events, and we shouldn't have to go back to reconstruct those shoulders in the future, like as has happened in the past. We're also able to, now that the weather's kind of changing, been able to get onto some of the issues here in Virginia City, like, for example, the potholes. We're starting to get some of the significant potholes reconstructed and fixed here in town. Also, starting to sweep some of the streets and move forward with some of those just seasonal adjustments of some of our activities. And as a final note, we're getting the pool ready to go for this summer. Looking for opening the pool near the end of the school year. And at this point, we're having some challenges recruiting lifeguards. The position starts at $11 an hour. It's a great summer job for high school students or college students. So if you know anybody who might be interested, please refer them our way. Like I said, starting pay minimum is $11 an hour. With that, do you have any questions?
Any questions for Jason?
So do you have a ballpark time frame when you think 6 Mile might be opened up?
Under the two scenarios, two weeks, 2 months.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Do you want to go next?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Director of Community Development, Dean Haymore.
Thank you, Commissioners. Just to inform you, tomorrow we have our kickoff meeting with FEMA up here on the flood damage repairs mitigation. And I've invited all the different departments that need to be involved in that, things like that. We went to a FEMA training yesterday on contracts and the procedures and everything. So we're staying in line with everything. Currently, right after this meeting at 1 o'clock, I have another meeting with the insurance adjuster on the insurance claims that we have on the different buildings, chimney, bridges, things like that. We did find out yesterday that the money's handed down to the state hands it to the counties, and then if there's GIDs or other ones, then it's got to go through the counties, and we have to work with the GIDs. So I will work with the Canyon GID. That's the only one at this time that I know that is eligible. Luckily, the GID was smart enough to insure Circle del Cerise too. So I'm working with the same adjuster and Donna Squires on working with the plan. I suspect at some point, through Pat and the county commissioners, that we'll want some kind of agreement with the GID, because FEMA only replaces 75% of the cost, and there's a 25% cost that we have to eat. Through Sherry and Joe, we're going to ask for 12.5% of that through a state plan to lessen that 25% hit. FEMA will, we have a $5,000 deductible on every building that we have a claim on. Typically, FEMA will pay 75% of that $5,000 deductible too, as it was related to the storm of 2017. Working with, you'll see business licenses up and down. We're still running quite a few. We're over 100% of last year business licenses. And we're working, we did permit, or getting ready to permit a building G at Tesla for the foundation. And so that's going forward. I do have a meeting next week or 2 weeks with the Fulcrum engineers and planners out of Germany. Our staff, and we'll have Pat Witten involved in that meeting. So they have all the funding to go with their project almost put together, and they want to start their design plan. USA Parkway, I drove through there. It is a beautiful drive, beautiful colors, different colors of the cuts. You can see the Ramsey Town site. They're on the bottom side of taking all that loose dirt and everything on the Lyon County for the last 200-300 miles. They broke through all the way to Highway 50. And they're anticipating that will be done in August. Ames told me that they'll probably have that grand opening the second week of September. So I wanted to let you know that. Great. Any questions?
On the FEMA, the 25% you were talking about, is that to county or the GID or and or both?
What the program is FEMA will reimburse 75% of the cost of the damage. And then the county and or the recipient has to eat the 25%. The state of Nevada has a fund set aside that we can apply for, and Sherry Nevin has already did that, and they will reimburse out of that 25%, 12.5%. So if we're lucky, we'll only take a 12.5% kick on those costs to recover from the flood.
Will the GID be responsible for its own 25%?
Yes, they will. That's why we want them, and I want some kind of formal agreement between you guys, the county commissioners, and their GID board, so they understand that. We've been brainstorming some different ideas. You know, we put railroad bridges in there. It's going to be a big cost. That's one of the big costs, and 6 Mile Canyon is one of the big costs that we had during the flood, and hopefully Jason said that he's going through, we'll know a couple weeks if FWHA or NDOT's going to take that on as a project. which will be a delay project because it's going to take a couple of years to put that in. But I think for the county's benefit, we can get a lot of improvements and a lot of money put into Six Mile Canyon. We still have some questions out there. We're going through these kickoff meetings, trainings, and everything else. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. County Assessor, Janice Seddon.
Nothing at this
time. Director of Community Relations, Sherry Nevin.
Good morning, Sherry Nevin for the record. Just to clarify a little bit on that match, Jack, for FEMA, it is a 25% match. The state has what they call a disaster relief account. So counties can apply and cities to that to receive reimbursement of 50%. So we'd see a 12.5% match. Keep in mind that has to go before the legislature. You know, there's no guarantees we'll get that, but we were successful in the 97 event in getting that particular match amount. So all the paperwork required has been submitted. There is a lengthier application that we'll have to go through, and I'll have to work with Comptroller Gallagher on that because we request a lot of stuff on our budget and taxing structure and all that kind of stuff. So just wanted to remind folks that the Small Business Administration is offering low-interest loans. I mentioned it at the last meeting. To residents and businesses affected by the flood. They can loan up to $2 million, and their average interest rate is about 2.5%. So they had a service center that was open in the Reno area that is closed, but you can still go online. There is a timeline to submit your application for that, but that is a program that they're offering. Last Tuesday, working with the Northern Nevada Development Authority, we hosted 35 folks from Poland here in Virginia City. They were here for a governor's trade mission. Thank you to Pat for being there to offer a few opening remarks. They were a tad delayed. They were coming from the legislature. They were delayed with that, so they were almost an hour late getting up here. But also thank you to Laura at the Fourth Ward, who at the last minute, when we found out on a Thursday that they were coming on a Tuesday, allowed us to come into the building and use that for lunch. So I think they had a fun time. We took them around on the trolley, and they saw a few spots and got to walk around town. So we took care of the extra time they had in between events. So the Mark Twain Community Center will hold their community meeting tomorrow night. That's a quarterly meeting at 6:30. If you're able to attend, it's always a good chance to get out and meet the folks in Mark Twain community. I believe that we've got a few folks coming to update them on progress of certain flood-related projects down there in Mark Twain. Additionally, I have some tickets available for the annual Night to Imagine Community Chess fundraiser that will be held on April 14th at Piper's Opera House. They are bringing legendary, from what I'm hearing, singer and songwriter Rodney Crowell for a concert that evening. So if you're interested in purchasing tickets, please see me and I'll be happy to get those for you. That's all I have. If anyone has any questions for me.
Questions? Great. Thank you, Sherry.
And oh, one more thing.
We've got Laura and Erica, both from our different nonprofits, so if they can get a chance, if they have anything to add today.
Thank you. Director of Planning, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to get through this without coughing and all that. Just a couple things for you all. We are in the open enrollment period for health benefits insurance for all of our employees, elected officials, and this is an interesting period of time with the insurance company coming back and looking at not only our experience rating, but what's going on nationally as far as our rates, and the premiums will go up. And so what we've been working with our team and our benefits committee on looking at ways to try to keep the premiums down, particularly for the taxpayers, but then looking at how do we keep the benefits reasonable for our employees through some trade-offs and going back and forth. So that's what we're working on right now. And we'll probably come up with something, but we'll probably end up a little bit more with a plan with choices in this term than we have now, where there'll be a an HSA high deductible plan with a PPO and maybe different variations of both for employees, and other folks can look and say, well, this one works best for me and this one works best for someone else, and we still can keep the costs down to the county. Our open enrollment periods, and I announce this really for everybody that's an employee, an elected official, or otherwise on our plan, is April 4th or April 5th, and there's going to be two offers that day. One is at 10 o'clock, and another one is at 2 o'clock, and any person can choose either of those. And then on April 6th, there's another one at 9 o'clock. The open enrollment is where LP Insurance, our broker, will come up, and they'll talk about the plans and what they mean. And then this is a chance for everybody really to enroll, determine what type of plan they want, and then also address beneficiaries and things like that. The next thing to talk about is the parking lot next door. As you're aware, it's wet, and it started to dry, and it was looking good, and now it's wet again. And wet means wait. Unfortunately, they cannot pave the parking lot until it is dry, not only on the surface, but underneath. So when they put the compactors and everything in there, that water doesn't bubble up and create a soup. So unfortunately, we have more delay with what we see going on outside the window. We're hoping, depending on weather, that this thing will get done in 2 or 3 weeks, but it has to be dry in order for that asphalt to sit properly. Fortunately, there is power. You'll see at nighttime the lights are on in the parking lot, and not only is it for the parking lot, but for B Street in the area. The lights on the courthouse are all now replaced and working as well, and look very nice and are good for security in the area. And that's what's again the electricians actually were here this Saturday with some public works staff in getting the parking lot plugged into the building and getting the car charger and the Tesla charger energized and ready to be installed. And I always emphasize the reason for the Tesla charger is it puts us on the Tesla maps, and people will, for tourism purposes that drive Teslas, which there's a number of them now, will see this as a potential place where they can charge and then enjoy themselves for 3 or 4 hours and then head their way back home. We'll let you know that this Thursday is the Planning Commission's USGS Water, the USGS Water Study Open House. Our town hall, this is going to happen out in the Highlands in the fire station, and the USGS will give a presentation again that they've given already on the water conditions out in the Highlands. But this is really the time for the public to attend and really try to give direction to the planning commissioners, to myself, and even county commissioners that are present. What do we want to have as far as the scope of the study? And then really my team and us are going to go back and look at, you know, how far do we take the study and where do we try to cover for that area. So it's an important meeting to attend. And last but not least, speaking of water and all that, I want to give you an update of the Mark Twain flood study. I've been working again, as you know, in our team with the Carson Water Subconservancy District to create a flood plan for that area. And we are at that point. The USGS is going to do a LIDAR flyover of that area and all of Story County here in the next couple weeks. LIDAR is basically like radar, except it creates high-resolution topography maps. And that map is going to be used for the subconservancy and their group to create the flood plan for Mark Twain. And then we are also going to have an MOU agreement with Lyon County so that our flood plan meets Lyon County's flood plan, and that MOU agreement will be administered through the subconservancy district. All of this will be paid through FEMA, and the reason that we're eligible for the to have FEMA funding for us is because we're now in the Carson Water Subconservancy Charter that you all approved not long ago, and that makes us eligible for all of that. And so this, so far, we're looking at probably putting about $280,000 to $300,000 worth of flood planning study into the Mark Twain Estates area. And this should be up and running pretty soon here. And Far West Engineering will be working with both Lyon and Story County on creating the plan. And that's it.
Any questions for Austin?
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Austin. Let's see. Fire Department. Chief Nevin, Chief Haynes.
I have nothing at this time.
All righty.
Do I have anything?
Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Got a little hitch in my giddy-up from St. Patrick's Day. Yesterday, there was a NACO conference in Carson City, and strictly for trying to find out some information about Advanced Data Systems Retirement Plan. As you know, they're retiring December 31st of 2019, and it is a huge project right now to find out services that we can get, not only hardware but software, maintenance. The cost of those has been going on for about 2 months now, 2.5 months. There are two big components of this. One is the assessor's package that is the most difficult because Nevada calculates assessed value a lot different than anybody else in the United States. So consequently, it's a project because those people, if you would think it was simple, it's not simple in Nevada. So it's trying to find a product or a vendor that will come in and pretty much do all of the software consolidations or whatever in order to make for all of this to work. It's a big project. Jana and her team of assessors across the state have looked at about 4 or 5 various ones. I think Jana's going out on Wednesday or Monday for a site tour. And I think that package hopefully will be a good package along with the clerk treasurer and the recorder so we don't have to have 2 or 3 or 4 disparate systems. The other is the accounting package, which includes our financial statements, payroll, vouchers, journal entries, all kinds of things. And that affects about 25 departments right now. So we're looking at the various providers to see, you know, what may fit. I learned yesterday that Lyon County has their accounting package up and running. Their comptroller, Josh Foley, is probably as good as they get. I may hang on his coattails for a little bit to see if he has gotten the bugs out of it. That may be a very good choice for us. Whether or not it's cost prohibitive, we don't know. So, and I know that Jack has got some comments on, because he made a couple of great comments yesterday doing it. I'll let him do it during his comment period. The other is the budgets. They're due 2 weeks from today at 9 o'clock. Don't eat too much in the morning. We've taken a look at this and I'm not happy. But it is a process and we have to understand it's a process. We have revenues that are anticipated to be anywhere from $700,000 to $800,000 less than they were last year. A lot of it's essentially assessed. A lot of it again is real and personal property. I'm going to revisit with Dean on business license permitting fees, things of that nature, to see how things are going in the park. But we'll make the adjustments necessary. But it's a good first blush of seeing what happens when. We don't have those designated revenues, but we still have services and supplies to pay for. So that will be at 9 o'clock on April 4th, and I think that's all I have for now.
Any questions for Mr. Gallagher?
No questions.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. So, Ms. Perry, I know that you're here for another agendized item. Did you want to give a report today on the St. Mary's?
Yes, please.
Good morning.
Good morning. St. Mary's has a few updates that we would like to share with you. First and foremost, we had the Nevada Arts Council ask us to host a focus group, which was designed to talk about what the arts might look like on the Comstock. And they asked St. Mary's to host it and invite leaders of organizations that were promoters of the arts or very much influential in them. And that included Sherry from the county, of course, Laura from 4th Ward, Sean from Community Chest, we had Piper's, Comstock Foundation, Joe Curtis, Jim Clark, and a representative from Silver City. It was a very good discussion. And what it talked about was the idea of Arts on the Comstock, how it could be more visible, how it could maybe benefit the children, benefit the adults, and basically grow the culture in our district. And so the number one outcome, and it was literally voted for, post-it notes, was the reestablishment of the Comstock's Arts Council. And so with that, we have done some research, and we're going to continue to do that and see what that might look like and how it may benefit the county. So Sherry asked that we share that with you today so that you can understand that that could be something that maybe is brought back. Also, in new programs and events, we have our new spring exhibition open. We opened last weekend. We'll be open through December 3rd. We also have a new membership program, Imagination's Children's Program, Artist in Residency Program, which includes individual artists as well as an option for communal, which I think is going to be very interesting for artists in the area as well as the community. The idea of a communal residency is that multiple artists from different areas will come together with different disciplines and create together in St. Mary's. So whether it's collaboratively or side by side, it's an interesting way to get more and visiting artists to engage with our community. Also, we have made progress on our second floor exhibition, which is going to be designed for telling the history of the property of St. Mary's, pre-hospital, hospital era, the dormant time, and then also the art center itself. We're very excited about that, very fortunate that Laura Mather from 4th Ward and her associate Rebecca Phipps and also our associate Paula Burris have been great about bringing true professionalism and museum research and expertise to the program. I think it's going to be fabulous, and it's going to be a way for the community and tourists to reengage with St. Mary's and truly learn a lot about the center and where it came from. We also have been collaborating with other organizations, which I think has really fostered a deep conversation between the directors. I'm very excited about that, and hopefully we will have something that we could share on a more group level in the future, but I think that's great strides that we've made. Two more things, and then I will let you get back to your agenda. We have also welcomed Story County IT into our building on the 4th floor. Their department, unfortunately, was damaged during the storms. They have been wonderful residents with us. James Dean has been terrific and very agreeable and amenable with working with our very strange and often complex calendars and visitors and guests and work. So I just wanted to say thank you for that, and we enjoy having them. And then last but not least, I want to thank Sherry Nevin, who has been an amazing advocate for St. Mary's and invited us to apply as part of a subgrantee grant program for SHPO, which would allow us to potentially receive a grant that would help us get that historical report assessment that we've been desperately wanting for years. So hopefully we will receive good notes and reviews on that and receive that grant, but Sherry has really been lovely, and I wanted to formally say that. And just to show you, should anyone be interested in the new programs, we have new brochures. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes. Erica, congrats on getting the membership program going. I think that's one of the little critical points, and you have Laura Mather of the 4th Ward School to thank to help get that going with you. I just went online a few days ago and joined as a member, and it was very easy, very convenient. And I also want to congratulate you or thank you for generating the children's program, because we've been needing that for a while, and I hope that's successful as well. I wanted to ask the question of
You know, Laura is doing an awesome job downstairs in the museum putting that together. This is kind of towards both of you. Is there anything in the works for maybe the Art Center to have something on display, part of its history, and maybe even some few pieces of art in there too, you know?
I would have to defer to Laura on
that.
Yeah,
okay. That's something to think about. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? One last comment that I almost forgot about, which I think is important. I missed it on my list. I apologize. Is the Easter egg hunt has returned to St. Mary's. Kim Hames has graciously decided to relocate from Miners Park down to St. Mary's. And as Ron and others in the community can attest, this is a tradition that goes very far back, and we are so pleased to have it come back to us. So that hunt will be on April 16th at 1 p.m. for Story County Children.
Will they be real eggs or plastic eggs?
She is adamant they will be real, dyed, decorated, boiled eggs with a couple prize eggs.
Okay.
Thank
you, Ms. Perry.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Director of the Fourth Ward School, Laura Mather.
Good morning. I just wanted to follow up real briefly on something that Erica mentioned as far as how important art is on the Comstock. Now, granted, I'm a history museum, but one of the changes that I'm making this year is how fundraising is done at the Fourth Ward School Museum. So what we will be doing is sort of a signature event each October. It will be our main fundraising event for the year. It will highlight a decade within our history. This year, it's going to be the second Saturday in October, and it's going to be stepping back in time to 1910. The reason why I chose 1910 is because I literally have a pile of desk pieces on the fourth floor. They're not desks from the Fourth Ward School. Those are artifacts and will always stay with us. They're from the original Central High School in Reno. The desks were made in 1910. Eric and I have worked together to create a list of specifically selected artists that will take pieces of those desks and create a piece of art. And the artists will donate it back to us, and then we will auction off those pieces of artwork at our fundraising event. So we have asked artists from the community, Corey, who you will meet in a minute when we talk about the mural, she's one of the first artists that have agreed to create a piece of artwork for us. So I think it really shows how those of us who either work or live in the community are really coming together and helping each other out to support our organizations and raise money. So I hope everybody keeps that in mind. Again, it's the second Saturday of October. We should have some spectacular pieces of art that have been created on these desk pieces. So I'm really looking forward to that. And to answer the question, there was a question about art in the Slammer Museum. We can certainly do that. So one really important aspect of a museum is that it is never complete. It is always changing. So the exhibits need to change, fairly frequently. That keeps people coming back to the museums. We have one cell that's been set aside specifically for a changing gallery. So that is a two-dimensional exhibit space, but we can certainly accommodate three-dimensional artwork pieces, too. Does anybody have any questions for me on the Fourth Ward School?
That's great. Thanks, Ms. Mather.
Thank you, Laura.
All right. Director of Emergency Management, Joe Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Curtis, Emergency Management. As you're well aware, since January 3rd, essentially, we've been impacted significantly throughout the county by rain, snow, rain, snow, rain, snow, rain. And I think it stopped at the moment, if I see up there. But That impact has had significant impact throughout the county. All districts have, in one form or another, been impacted by this historic 2017 winter period. As a result, it has put a lot of strain on a lot of county employees from virtually every department of the county to participate in our emergency coordination center that several of you have actually visited when we were in full operation, sometimes upwards to 12, 14 hours at various times and holding multiple briefings and so forth. Now we have transitioned into a period of time where, because we have an historic snowpack in the mountains, we are now moving towards what will be somewhere between 200 and 400% of normal spring runoff. And since Jason didn't bring it up in the meeting in his comment, but I loved his comment this morning in our morning meeting, was that you referred to as the Carson River. And my first thought was, well, what's the Carson River have to do with Story County? Well, what he's referring to is the river that is flowing down Carson Street in Virginia City. So we have a Story County Carson River now. And that is this runoff that's coming on the mountains behind us through the Cedar Ravine and Ophir Ravine and down through the Mexican Ravine and so forth. And that's flowing through the community and then down through the canyon, as has been from time immemorial. So those things have impacted public works significantly, have impacted our financial factors. And I think I say all this to say that I want to commend all of the various people that have had to jump in, leave their regular positions within county government, and sit in an emergency coordination center and put all the response factors together. Because we have several aspects of dealing with these disasters and emergencies. And this is the fourth one that I've been through in Story County, and several before that when I was in Carson. And we have a response function, which is what we were doing January through about the early part of February almost. And then we go into an aspect of getting ourselves back together again and looking at things like resiliency and the ability to come back together and to be able to rebuild and again get ourselves back to where we were to begin with. And then the repairing function moves to a short-term factor, and then it moves to a long-term factor, which, as we all know, could sometimes take several years from the time it actually occurred. And again, I say all the districts of the county were affected in one way or another. And so our public works department and people that we've had to hire to bring in and assist us have had to go and work in all of these districts of the county. And they've done a tremendous job. From my personal standpoint, I got to kind of stand back and I didn't have to spend much time in the field. And it's really comforting to see that, I guess I could say, as usual in some respects, that this small community, this county, can come together the way it does in a disaster or in a major event that occurs. It seems to, in my experience, has always been that way. We've always taken care of ourselves for the most part, but we do have the backup of the state, and we utilize that. Now we're dealing with FEMA. FEMA encompasses a lot of our time. Dean Haymore is well impacted by that, as Jason is, and we all are, in dealing with these meetings and so forth with them. So I say all that just to say that, you know, we've all been out there doing our functions since the first part of January, and it's going to continue on. It is a big concern to us, all of that aspect. So with that being said, is there any particular questions anyone has about what we've been involved in? Anything in particular?
No, Joe, I think you've always done a good job of keeping us abreast of everything that's going on.
I appreciate it. I try to bring the weather to you as best possible every day. And
you bring us the worst weather you possibly can.
That's right, yeah. That's my job. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Deputy District Attorney Keith Lewis.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Gay Land?
Nothing at this time.
County Manager Witten.
Yes, thank you. Just very briefly, I also want to add on to what Joe just shared, and I'm going to miss a name here, but that extends that sense of community, that sense of teamwork extends beyond people that are, you know, getting paid in their county jobs. It includes the volunteers, you know, whether they be on a CERT program or our various volunteer fire departments or others. And then a couple that I definitely want to single out that I think were there every step of the way, particularly as we move from rain to snow in early January, and that's Jay Carmona, and the name I'm missing is Brownwell, but I cannot think of his first name.
Gary.
Gary, thank you very much. Gary Brownwell. You know, those two gentlemen, you know, took time to come down to the EOC and forge a plan together with Jason's team and Gary's team and now Jeff's team, but it was it wasn't just us. I want to make sure everybody knows there were an awful lot of people calling the ECC and saying, what can I do for you, you know, from, you know, making a food run or anything. So that all needs a leader. That's Joe, but you had a great team throughout the entire county, Mitch and the Canyon GID folks as well. So that's all I have today, sir.
Okay.
I know. I'll save it for the next time.
Any questions?
Good morning. So on March 13th, we made the call for a special election. It's going to be held on April 11th, which is a Tuesday, from 7 to 7, just like a normal election. There's been a little bit of confusion about who can vote. Anybody who's a current registered voter in the county can participate in the election. And we will be open this Saturday from 8 to 5 for close of registration. So if you're not registered and you want to get in there, that'll be the last day. We're doing absentee ballots just like we would normally, so if you want one, we need a written request by April 4th. Tomorrow, the 22nd, is the last day on which a petition to nominate other candidates for the office of Surrey County Sheriff can be filed. So far, we haven't had any interest in that, but tomorrow is the deadline. Our polling places will be the same as they were for the last election, except for one change. In Lockwood, we've moved to the fire station from the community center. We'll be holding early voting on Saturday, April 1st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. here at the courthouse and at the fire station in Lockwood. And then we'll continue early voting April 3rd through April 7th from 8 to 6 here at the courthouse.
Could you clarify the from the community center to the fire station?
Yeah, from the senior center in Lockwood, we've moved over to the fire station in Lockwood for voting.
Very good.
And that's it.
Questions? Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you.
I miss anybody? Everybody? Okay. That concludes the committee and staff reports. This will bring us up to item number 6. This is discussion only, and we'll take no action. Discussion and direction to staff regarding legislation or legislative issues proposed by legislators or by other entities permitted by the Nevada State Legislature to submit bill draft requests or such legislative issues as may be deemed by the chairman or the board to be critical significance to Story County. Specific bills will include SB 57, which staff has expressed full support. Any updates on that,
Pat? I do, Mr. Chairman. Also, I'm going to ask Austin to come up. He's been active in the process, and I also will defer to you on a couple of those that you have been very active in over the past few weeks. So SB 57 specifically is the bill to reset the Virginia, the Nevada Commission for the Reconstruction of the Virginia and Truckee Railway. It got its first hearing. It was scheduled for workshop, which is always a good sign. That means it's close to coming out of committee and going to the floor. Unfortunately, there was a very poorly worded letter submitted to the committee chair, Senator Parks, that totally attempted to totally erode and, in my words, sabotage the efforts of everybody who had come to agreement that this needed to be done. This was a good thing. The author of that, apparently without authorization from her board, is Candace Duncan. She's the project manager. So we are temporarily derailed, if you will, and all of us are working hard to get that back on track. It's sad that one person's misguided opinion can take a piece of legislation that had pretty much unanimous support from Carson City, of course from Story County, but more importantly from Douglas and Washoe counties, and then also Lyon. Ms. Duncan wants the counties of Douglas and Washoe to be forced to stay on there in some misguided pipe dream that they will eventually see the benefits and start contributing money to this. Yet each of those two entities in particular have said, we really don't know why we're on here. So we're working it. Hopefully it will go through. It's a good bill, and I think it's the only way, in my opinion, to begin a process that puts the right people in charge from a board level to make these to make the necessary changes and flexes, working with the two tourism authorities and whatnot. So we're working it hard. Commissioner McGuffey's there with me every step of the way, and we won't give up on this one. So that's 57, and I think Austin's got some, and I believe you might too.
Great. Come on up, Austin.
Thank you, Chairman, Commissioners. I'll try to be real brief on these, and I'm not going to talk about all of the collective bargaining bills, water bills, and land use bills that are floating around. I've been kind of trying to keep you updated a little bit during staff reports and otherwise, and as major hurdles come, I'll be glad to come back up. There's quite a bit of activity going on in the collective bargaining bill world here, and some of them are a little bit kind of, I think, silly. The first one is right now for peace officers and firefighters, if there's somebody dies in the line of duty, their kids then currently would get tuition paid. That's fine. But there's a bill in there to, you know, apply this to all public employees. To me, I think that probably one of the dangerous things in my job is I could drown in my coffee or something like that. I don't think that really, you know, provides me the necessary benefit to have that a policeman, a sheriff's deputy, or firefighter would have. So we're really not supporting that. There's things in here for if they even were unwillful or willful mistakes in overtime calculation, that there's a bill to make that go back as triple pay for the mistake, not just double pay. There's a bill in here, if you understand fact-finding or arbitration, when you come to impasse in a collective bargaining agreement, that impasse will go to a fact-finder that's a union folk or like an arbitrator. They come up with all the facts. They'll do a regional compensation study. They'll do whatever. And they'll say, okay, our recommendation is the county or the union give either way. And then the county and the union then have a chance to mediate for no cost through FMCS mediation services or just to agree and then be done with it. Well, the bill is to change this to, instead of the arbitrator hearing it after that, making the final rule, if they're still in pass, the fact finder would actually just be the final rule. There wouldn't be an arbitrator. I think this would be a substantial increase of cost to counties and cities, despite one of the proponents saying this is actually trying to be a cost-saving measure. And I think it really eliminates the county and the employee's ability to come to a mediated resolution. So we're not supporting that. There is a document, a bill that makes employee orientation a subject to bargaining item. That means for the process that we orientate a brand new employee and bring them on board, we now have to have the union come to them and be able to talk about union matters and then also bargain how we do that in a collective bargaining agreement. So we're not going to be in support of that. There is a bill a little bit here over disciplinary investigations for sheriff's office and police type of folks. What it provides is if that investigation is done and not done correctly, then it would provide hold on just a second here, provide that the county would have to pay all the legal costs and lawyer's fees and everything to that person that allegedly suffered. Probably one of the biggest problems with that is not necessarily the benefit of the employee or not the benefit, but that if an arbitrator is the one that rules that a wrongdoing was done, then we still have to pay all those costs. And if we know, arbitrators are not judges. They don't follow necessarily the constitutions and the NRSs and the laws. They can make very arbitrary decisions, and they're open about the fact that they make arbitrary decisions based on nothing. Arbitrators have been known to say, I've ruled in the favor of employees three times in a row, and I'm not looking really good to the employer, so I better do one in favor of the employer because it's time for that. I mean, they've been known to rule that way. So we're not in favor of that. There is a bill, SB 289, that would provide, right now we have in-network healthcare providers in our benefits plan, and then we got out-of-network. If you really want to see your special doctor that's not covered, there's a little bit of cost that will be provided to that, but not the full cost. This bill would make it where there is essentially no out-of-network, that the employer would have to pay the difference for the employee to see an out-of-network doctor. I don't need to explain the challenges with that. There is a bill, SB 297, regarding PERS. Right now, you're an employer-paid PERS program, a defined benefit, or you are like Lyon County that has a defined benefit or 50-50. There's a new bill here that employees hired after 2018 may have a choice to be involved in a, like a 401k shared benefit plan through a PERS system. Don't know where that's going. This might actually be a benefit to employees and employers. We're kind of watching that. There's a land use bill. I'm not going to talk a lot about this, but I just want to bring a point that's important. It's kind of known as the Red Rock Bill. It's AB 277. This makes it where you can't change your zoning in any county to increase the density of housing if it's within 5 miles of a conservation area or a recreation area. We are not within 5 miles of these areas. It's not really a concern to us now. It's not much of a concern to Northern Nevada. It's a huge concern to Clark County in preserving the Red Rock National Monument or the Red Rock Park. Concern I have is here is if there were to be another designation, whether it's in Story County or in Washoe County, Lyon or Carson, for another conservation or recreation area, that could really squelch a county's ability to do its own zoning and come up with reasonable compromises for allowing growth. So we're concerned about that, but we're probably not going to push hard because it's really not a Northern Nevada bill. And then there's numerous water bills that are out there. Most of them are really focused on what we've talked about extensively is these critical management areas in eastern Nevada and most importantly in Pahrump and the water master's ability to come up with a reasonable compromise to protect surface domestic wells while having to administrate kicking junior water rights off of ability to pump in these areas. We don't have critical management areas in Story County. We may not, but there's the potential for the Highlands to become a sub-basin, which would be called a critical management area, and the engineer's office could possibly come in and make changes to the amount of water that's allowed to be pumped or allow meters or whatever. But that's not what the bill's about. It's a very misunderstood bill with this. I'm not going to go into all the discussion because I've done that quite a bit, especially with the Planning Commission, unless you want me to. Those are kind of the main ones that are going on right now.
Any questions for Austin? Okay, great. Thanks,
Austin. Thank you.
Yeah, following up on this, this has been a very very active legislative session. County Manager Witten has spent more time, I think, at the legislature than he has in his office so far this season. We've testified on numerous bills down there, specifically on this SB 57, the B&T bill. I think there were 10 of us that went ahead and testified in favor of the bill. Two persons voted neutral on it. Nobody voted objecting to the bill. And as far as I know, your board, the Railroad Commission board, never authorized Ms. Duncan to go ahead and send a letter to Senator Parks in opposition to this. And knowing that, I went ahead and went with one of our lobbyists, Mary Walker, and spoke to Senator Parks and let him know that she did not have the blessing of that board. And so he was pretty surprised at that she would put it on the letterhead of the Railroad Commission. And so he was surprised by that, so I think that's something in our favor. Of course, Mary Walker and her husband are retained by Story County as paid lobbyists, and they do a fine job for us, as Bun Hess is also down there. So these, our lobbyists are down there every day that the legislature is in session, looking to protect Story County and our interests. Another lousy bill that's out there is Assembly Bill 153. That Assemblyman Skip Daly from Sparks, it's his bill. It would put impacts, if any future development any county wants to do, they're going to look at the surrounding communities and see if it might impact them with any type of services, whether it be police, fire, health, education. And so if these counties could go ahead, or any municipal jurisdiction could go ahead and impose some type of fee upon another county or their business on what the impact, the financial impact would be. So it's really lousy legislation. 16 of us went ahead and testified in opposition to the bill. No one testified neutral, and only Assemblyman Skip Daly went ahead and testified in the affirmative for the bill. So it was pretty awkward. Even that is his own committee, and his own committee lambasted him pretty good over presenting real lousy legislation. So with any luck, that bill will be dead on arrival soon. So anyway, we're pushing heavy on SB 57, the BMT bill, and trying to kill 153. That concludes item number 6. We'll move on.
I got a couple updates on bills too.
Okay.
There's a AB 143 property tax formula correction bill, is what they call it. That's right now it's been rewritten to where there's not going to be any tax hike. What they're going to do is they're going to let that tax formula just kind of correct itself as it gradually builds up back up. And once it hits 3%, then 3% then becomes the base. So that's just an update on that bill.
Thanks for bringing that up, too, because as Mr. Gallagher just pointed out, we're going to have a reduction in centrally assessed taxation collection. And when you look at the property taxes, there's basically, it's been flat, you know, since about 2007. Anybody looks at their tax bills in the county, basically it's stayed the same, gone up a few dollars or gone down a few dollars. So as the cost of doing government goes on every year, increases because of our collective bargaining agreements that we have with the unions, everybody's entitled to a little bit of an increase every year, and we're getting less tax collection. It's a very good point on trying to fix the literature, trying to fix this property tax cap so that there will be a base and I can't go down any further. Go ahead and continue on. Thanks, Jack.
The SB 302, which is the marijuana bill, they've introduced a new bill to replace the original. They're saying there'll be a 15% tax rate with 5% going to county's general fund that have marijuana establishments. So that's only if you have an establishment, otherwise you won't get anything. Okay, and then a new bill just surfaced yesterday, SB 345, tax abatements impact to counties. So now they want to have some kind of impact study for the county. You know, what's the county losing, basically? So we got to be careful on that one. It's written very similar to AB 153, and it's one of those, you're setting up more red tape and roadblocks for progress. I mean, Story County's got a history of now fast-tracking projects, getting these companies going fast, you know, and that's, they don't want to sit around waiting for somebody to do it, some kind of abatement study or impact fees. So that one just surfaced yesterday. We're still deciphering it. So that's all I'll add to that.
Great. Thanks, Jack. Last year, anything to add? Okay. No, so why don't we go ahead and we'll move on to item number 7 now. These are board comments. We'll take no action, public comments. And I'll come right back to Commissioner Gilman.
Nothing good, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chairman McGuffey.
Yes. Well, I think, first of all, is she going to be able to make it, Erica?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'll just go. I wanted to congratulate one of our local residents, Lacey J. Dalton. She was just inducted to the Country
Music Hall of Fame.
Music Hall of Fame. So I just like to, I was hoping to get her here and get her at a girl, but so I think this is good. Oyster Fry was a great hit. Man, this looked like a 4th of July crowd to me. I mean, it was, town was packed. Parking was an issue. I think even if our new parking lot was open, we'd still have a parking issue. So, congrats to Liquid Blue and Danny and his team. It really went well. I already talked about St. Mary's Art Center. And then I want to add to Mr. Gallagher's comments on the ADS workshop we had yesterday. We had a room of about 25 people. We had 10 on the phone on this meeting. And there was just too many people with too many, everybody's going off in their own direction to speak of. And so I recommended that we generate an advisory board. And to keep the head count down, I recommended, and which was approved, that each county will come up with a representative. And these representatives would be either a comptroller, a treasurer, clerk, assessor. You know, our group, let's say for the Story County, these people will get together and kind of pick somebody to represent Story County for this ADS system. Okay. The next, once the county picks somebody, then they need to contact Dagny Stapleton of NACO no later than March 27th. April 3rd at 3 p.m. will be the next meeting for this group. So we kind of need to get the ball rolling on that. Okay. And that's all I have.
Right. Thanks, Jack. I was going to talk about the celebration, but you already took my thunder out of there. The Parade of Leprechauns. The Parade of Leprechauns was great.
I didn't see the parade. I was judging, so I didn't get to see the parade.
It was great. Yes. D.A. Langer is one of the judges this year.
So was you.
In full garb.
Yes. You Gallagher.
Mr. Gallagher?
Yeah, where is he?
That's right. Drinking to your Gallagher. Okay, we're going to move on now to item number 8. This is discussion and possible action. Accept bid submitted by Corey Zam Northam and A. Perry in the amount of $11,000 to design and create a wall mural in the Courthouse Slammery Museum along the Upper West and North Walls. Authorize the county manager and district attorney to execute a contract to facilitate this.
Mr. Chairman, I'll kick off when I'm going to ask Ms. Mather to come up and also Corey and Erica and let them really explain the whole program. I just want to kind of again state how phenomenal this museum committee is. I'm going to call out some individuals. Obviously, Laura is our leader when it comes to this project, and she's done a phenomenal job. In addition to Laura, I'm looking at least 3 more members here that have been integral every step of the way, and that's Joe Curtis. I see Joe probably more in his role as volunteer museum support than I see him anywhere else. And Ron Gallagher, who takes the time to come up every 2 weeks and participate and provide input and help guide, make what's happening downstairs happening. And then last but certainly not least, kind of it also takes a person with a stern discipline and perhaps a stick, because you know a bunch of artists sometimes are like stray cats. But I want to thank Melanie Keener as well, because Melanie keeps the agendas and the invitations flowing out there, and there are others that are participating as well. So I think just at our last meeting we had a very exciting opportunity come our way, so I'm going to let Laura talk to it. There's one little work around that we're going to talk about at the end, but Laura, please.
Absolutely, and to add to the people in the room, Pat, I also wanted to thank Sherry Nevin also.
Oh, excuse me.
Who has created the Story County Today exhibit and did a fabulous job on it. So I just wanted to give a brief update on the museum. It's moving right along. I am so proud to be part of the team. As Pat mentioned, the team is just fabulous. And I think we've created a really neat little museum that the county and the county citizens can be really proud of. I would like to say that it's almost done, but again, a good museum exhibit is never done. It's always a work in progress. But for the most part, we have all of the photo and text panels up in the display cases. There's one cell that I have sort of set aside with the Fourth Ward School opening up for the season on May 1st. I kind of need to switch gears and focus on my main job as the director. So one cell is kind of set aside, and I'll start working on that as time allows. So the next step that we have, because we have started really from nothing with this exhibit, is that we will reach out to the community of Story County. My hope is that community members will come to the museum, see the photographs, read the text panels, and see if they have anything in their home, in their personal collections, that they would like to donate to the museum as artifacts that go along with the story. So it's important that they come into the museum to see how limited our space is. So the cabinets have a very limited space, and we have no storage outside of that. So my hope is that they'll read one of the exhibits and think, I've got an artifact that will go perfect with that. They're welcome to contact me through email. My email address is on the Fourth Ward School website. A photograph and a brief description would be wonderful. I'll then take that to the committee, and we'll decide if that's something that we want to add to the exhibit. So that's really our next step. We're moving right along, and it's I'm very proud of it. And speaking of very proud and fabulous people, I want to allow our two mural artists to introduce themselves and talk about the mural. And again, I think it highlights what Story County has to offer as far as citizens of the county and people that work within the county, and what we can do to make a difference.
Hello, everyone, again. My name is Erica Perry. I am the owning manager of Pura Vida Sierra's Art for the contract record. This is Corey Zamorfin.
Good morning. I'm a business owner here in Virginia City, Nevada Stained Glass, Firehorse Studio, artist and muralist.
We have with us drawings, renderings of the proposed mural. That was upside down.
Oh. Yes, it's kind of like that.
So we have our proposed renderings of the mural, and the idea is that it provides a soft landscape design that goes above the exhibit boxes on the west and north walls, done in sepia gray and a slight ochre tone, like the patina of a vintage aged photograph, and it focuses on landscape and fauna. It will have, hopefully, a long-distance view, focusing on mountains and looking back into the distance, sort of like when you picture the view from the Bucket of Blood, that 100-mile view, something like that. So if you can picture that along this long wall, if you will, and then it wraps around to the west wall, it will complement the exhibits. If any of you have already seen the museum exhibits, it has a lovely continuity to it. What we propose with the mural is that our mural does not compete with the exhibits, which will, as Laura mentioned, rotate. And so instead we want to complement that. And then we also would like to soften the lines of the architecture. It's a jail. It's not exactly welcoming and soft. We want visitors to come in and draw them in through that to see the exhibits, but also give them something that just makes it a little bit more warm. So, if you may want to, I don't know if everyone in the audience can see it. So in this case, these are the exhibit boxes, the displays, if you will, and then above that is the mural. This area here is the podium area, which includes a television, and that's where the presenter will be. We took artistic license and incorporated stacked rocks, which are near the petroglyphs, and added petroglyphs to that rock stack. So that is our interpretation of something that does reside in Story County. And then, as you can see, it's very much an organic design. Corey is sharing more detailed sketches of her ideas for the animals that may be included in the landscaping and plants that may be incorporated into the design as well. And then also, as a nod to our mining history, we would include the engraved, etched, soft lines of where mining digs happen. And you can't see it from your distance, but it's proposed to be somewhere in the mid-ground. So it's not something that's necessarily in your face, but it's absolutely something that's notable and acknowledging our history. So with that, we propose the project will take approximately 5 months to complete, largely because we will be doing this after hours so that we don't impede or impact the Story County staff or visitors with the fumes from the paint, which should be very minimal. It's mostly acrylic paints. But that is our proposal, and we hope that everyone thinks that it will add value and add culture to the museum. Are there any questions?
We'll open it up for public comment.
I do have, maybe before public comment, Mr. Chairman, a couple of procedural items, one in particular. If the proposed contract, the draft contract, has been drawn up by the DA's office through Mr. Loomis, and we're always appreciative. Section 3, dealing with industrial insurance, also known as work comp insurance, that's a work in progress. We went through, keeping in mind first off that this project would probably cost us about three times as much, at least, if we went to murals or us in Reno or anywhere. So we're getting a great deal, a tremendous deal that almost is too good not to take, in my opinion. But working with workers' comp, particularly with two individual LLCs, has proven to be burdensome and costly. So Carol Ingalls from our pool insurance has contacted all of us involved and stated that there is a waiver process that I believe both Ms. Perry and Corey are willing to go through, that we should be able to cover them under our work comp. It's just a procedural process. And by authorizing myself and the district attorney to finalize the contract, I just wanted to note that that will be a fundamental change, I'm sure. Lastly, I think it has to be said, if you want to see proof of their work beyond their sketches and etchings, all you got to do is go park in the bucket lot. You know, it's a work that speaks for itself. And I've seen lots of Corey's work through stained glass presentations and whatnot. I think it's just super exciting that we have two local artists, you know, that are willing to dedicate their talents and their visions for this process. So we definitely recommend approving this contract.
Thanks, Pat. Okay, we'll open up now for public comment. Hearing none? Okay. With legal counsel's recommendation, I'm going to disclose that Corey San North End works occasionally for myself in the private sector. So, that being said, I don't think there's any conflict on this. This would be to go ahead and authorize the county manager and the district attorney to go ahead and facilitate this contract. Anything else? If not, I'll ask for a motion.
Comment?
I already asked.
Yeah. Okay. I'll make a motion. I, Commissioner McGuffey, move to approve the bid in the amount of $11,000 tendered by Corey Zam Northern and Erica Perry to create a mural painting in the courthouse Lammer Museum and authorize the county manager and district attorney to execute a contract to facilitate this.
Good.
Get that tongue-tied there.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved in second to go ahead and authorize the county manager and the district attorney to execute a contract to facilitate this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great.
Congrats.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for selecting Comstock Artists. We appreciate it.
All right. Moving up now to item number 9. This is discussion of possible action. Application for refund of property taxes in the amount of $19,189.58 requested by Stormal Investments, LLC. Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This application is brought pursuant to NRS 354-220, which provides that in the opinion of the Board of County Commissioners, the board is authorized to make a refund if the applicant for the refund has a just cause for making the application and granting of the refund would be equitable. So the standards are just cause for the request and granting the refund would be equitable. The decision of the board has to be unanimous. The refund request can go back for 3 years. The Stormos have already made an application to the Board of Equalization for the current year, and that request was not a refund. It was a reduction in the value of the building that the assessor has assessed the tax on. But, so this request for refund goes for the two previous years and is a request for a refund of the value of the building that exists out there in the Tri-Center. The There's an Attorney General opinion out there that says that not every request for refund can be heard by the Board of County Commissioners. It's only certain types of requests. If the request is one contesting the judgment of the assessor, that is one that has to go to the Board of Equalization. But if it's based on a mistake, then it could come to the board. And in this case, what happens is that the county assessor's office receives information that there's a building out there. They apply the Marshall and Swift standards and determine what is the value of the building, and that's what was done in this case. And it became apparent shortly afterwards that there were defects in the building that were not taken into account by the assessor's office. And so, in my view, this is an application that can be brought pursuant to the statute that I've described. So what you have in your package is basically three appraisals and two itemization of the cost of repair. There are two appraisals that have been submitted by the Stormos. One is from Mr. Ermston, and in his appraisal he states, I was advised by the owners of the building that the cost of repair of the building would exceed the cost to replace. And so he appraised the value of the building at zero based upon the representations made by the owners. The second appraisal submitted by the Stormos is from the Kimmel organization, in which Mr. Kimmel was provided a copy of the cost of repairs that the Stormos had put together through a separate entity, and that he assessed the value of the land and the building at around $1,800,000 and subtracted from that appraised value the cost of the repairs that had been provided by the Stormos, which was approximately $1,600,000, leaving about $193,000 left as to for the value of the building and the land. And if you subtract the value of the land, that left the land with the building with an approximate value of around $65,000. This is all subject to a fairly heated litigation process between the Stormo Investment Company, which owns the building, and the contractor who built the building, which is Dennis Banks Construction. They have litigation going on in the Second Judicial District Court. It's my understanding they have a big settlement negotiation set for later on in April. But it is a heated litigation. The third appraisal is one that was done by Caldwell Banker. In the Caldwell Banker appraisal, they state, we were advised by the contractor that the building has no defects and is in good shape. And so based upon that representation, he assumed that the building had been properly constructed in accordance with code and made it an assessment or appraisal of the value of around $1,500,000. Now, in the process of the litigation, Dennis Banks Construction also came up with an estimate of the cost of repairs, which is included within the packet. And that estimate of the cost of repairs is around $550,000. To repair the building and put it in an acceptable shape. So the question for you is whether or not the Stormos should be entitled to refund of the taxes they paid for the building or some portion thereof.
So, Mr. Loomis, this $19,189, that's the taxes that were paid on the building and improvements and not on the land itself?
That's my understanding, and Jen, I believe, can confirm that.
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, you want to weigh in?
So what's it? Sounds like there's two sides here. Is the building usable or not?
It is subject to a certificate of occupancy. Whether it's usable or not, I don't know. There is, I think that's disputed between the parties.
So, and that's still in litigation?
It's still in litigation. I did receive a letter from the attorney for Dennis Banks saying that Dennis Banks Construction would pay $1.5 million for the building now, but the storm was advising me that was an offer of settlement, not an offer to purchase. I did ask the attorney for Dennis Banks, is this an offer to purchase or an offer, will it settle litigation? His response was basically it's an offer of purchase, but I don't know what impact it would have on the litigation itself, which leaves it fairly ambiguous in my mind. The Stormers may have something they want to present.
Yeah. If the Stormers, if you would mind coming up, we can talk to you. Would you reach the podium if you could identify yourself for the record for the clerk, please? No, right at the podium there. That way everyone can hear you and it'll all be recorded. Good morning. Thank you for coming up today.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. I would like to thank the commissioners for hearing us. There are some very unusual circumstances, and I believe Mr. Loomis has brought up many of the issues that are here. I don't know how Dennis Banks and his attorney got involved in a simple request for refund of property taxes. But there is one thing that does concern my husband and I, and that is that this board would think that we withheld information from you or that we withheld information from the Board of Equalization hearings. And I do want to go into that. The CBRE appraisal report and the McCormick cost of repairs, which Mr. Loomis referred to, were prepared by DBC's counsel for mediation purposes and are, quote, protected from disclosure by law and case management orders, unquote. As such, Stormo Investments could not present those documents to you. The CBRE appraisal is a lowball report prepared exclusively for Dennis Banks Construction. Our highly regarded professional industrial realtors, whose market reports have been cited by many appraisers, disagree with CBRE's valuation. We have given you a copy of, in your packet, we brought it to the county commissioner, to the clerk and to Mr. Loomis. And you can see on that, as evidenced by their prepared sales brochure, they believe that our building, with no defects, would sell for around $2.2 million. And they have vested time and money on their opinion, marketing our building. Considering our costs approximate $1.5 million, we would not sell our property for such a low amount, but instead we would elect to lease the property in order to receive a reasonable rate of return on our investment. As for the letter that was dated March 15th, Attorney Castronova's remark, quote, please allow this letter to again confirm that Dennis Banks remains willing to purchase the subject building for $1.5 million, unquote, is disingenuous, as Mr. Keith Loomis has learned. First, Dennis Banks has not previously mentioned $1.5 million either verbally or in writing, and second, undoubtedly, the $1.5 million is predicated upon dismissal of all of our damages, which are substantial, and dismissal of all of our claims, which include alleged fraud. Therefore, the letter is not an offer of purchase in the traditional meaning of the term, and cannot be used as a basis for property tax valuation. Before continuing with our prepared remarks, we would like to reiterate, for the record, that Stormo Investments was not permitted to present the McCormick cost of repairs. We would actually like to thank the district attorney for allowing us to present this valuable piece of evidence for inclusion in our presentation. So you have before you three expert opinions, because we also gave to Mr. Loomis the Nevada State Contractor Board's, Nevada State Contractors Board's notice to correct. So you have the independent determination of the State of Nevada State Contractors Board notice to correct and the letter from NSCB Executive Officer Marky A. Green validating our concerns. You have the Stormo Investments determination by engineers, Madison Knepper and Associates, plaintiff cost of repair, and the pictorial presentation. And you have the determination of DBC's engineer, Rimkus Consulting Group, as detailed in the McCormick cost of repairs. All three experts address the discrepancies from plan and substandard workmanship issues, and we have included a comparative list in our documents for your later review. All three of these say there are major problems, just they come about trying to fix them a little differently. One of the differences being that I don't think that the Stormos should have to have their warehouse floor 1 inch higher than their office. And I don't think any of you would agree to that either. However, for brevity, we would like to cut to the heart of the matter. We direct your attention to the Nevada State Contractor Board item 19, which was noted by the NSCB investigators as an area of concern simply by looking at our building. We had not done destructive investigation yet. Complaint item number 19, roll-up door. Doors appear to be sagging in the top middle section, and CMUs are cracked up the wall at both corners. Upon scanning and opening the CMU walls, it was discovered that the three sets of four bars, 1, 2, 3, for a 62-inch lintel, which is the header above the doors, which should have been over each door extending 24 inches beyond the opening, do not exist. They're not there. Our engineering firm, Madison Knepper, concluded that this discrepancy from plan constituted a dangerous condition and detailed the repairs which must be performed to correct this dangerous condition. We must install an HSS 12 by 8 by half header beam welded to two HSS 8 by 4 by quarter posts at each roll-up door with steel base plate, fastened to opening at 24 inch on center with bolts epoxy to the CMU wall. The engineer representing Dennis Banks Construction could not refute the serious nature of this structural deficiency and stipulated, and this is in their cost of items, agree with plaintiff as to extent and cost of repair. Commissioners and District Attorney, Assistant District Attorney, gentlemen, the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, the fact is our building was constructed so negligently by the general contractor, Dennis Banks Construction, that our building has been designated unsafe by several engineers and should not, cannot be occupied until extensive remedial measures are completed to ensure the structural integrity of the premises. Although the minimum requirements set by Story County for a certificate of occupancy do not specify that the building must be structurally sound, we believe that structural integrity is necessary for habitability and safety, which are incorporated within the very nature and intent of the certificate of occupancy. The structural deficiencies which we have documented are inherent in our building and not caused by lack of maintenance or normal wear and tear or age. And had the structural deficiencies been known to Story County, we believe that the certificate of occupancy would not have been issued, and therefore our building would not have been placed on the tax rolls in 2015. Stormo Investments is asking for the refund of property taxes on a building which cannot be leased until structural repairs are completed and which cannot be sold unless a structural engineer certifies that the building is structurally sound after those repairs are completed. That is the simple truth and the circumstances on which the commissioners should base our request for refund. We hope that the board understands the gravity of the injuries we have sustained, injuries which we will continue to plague us for some time, and we humbly ask that the board grant our application for refund of property tax.
Early in your presentation, you used the term damaged.
Yes, sir.
So was this a damaged building, or are you talking
about damages as far as what we are going through? The building, we have opened walls to expose. We had to prove our case.
Was there damage after the building was built?
Our damages continue. We pay over $350,000 in attorney's
fees. Are you claiming construction defaults, or was it damaged after the building was built?
Oh, no. It was construction.
I only
when it was constructed. Okay. If you go through the Matson Knepper report, it lists item after item. The slab was short poured. The walls were allowed to freeze when they were being constructed. The lintels don't exist in the buildings, and the lintels are the beams that hold up, the CMU above all the openings. And so you've got the walls failing.
The walls are failing. How are they failing?
They froze during construction, so there's cracks all throughout that allows water intrusion. And without the beams to hold the CMU above the openings, those openings are starting to come down, and you've got cracks extending up from the openings. So there's nothing to support the weight above the openings in the CMU.
And when was this building built?
In 2015.
We began construction January 2015.
Okay.
And we received our certificate of occupancy May 13th, 2015.
Mr. Stormo, would you identify yourself for the record just so the clerk...
Ed Stormo.
Thank you.
Now, I thought because I made three copies of the pictorial. Do the commissioners not have those?
I would like to have Dean come up.
Ms. Stormo,
we also have... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Stormo, the building in question right now, are you going to tear the building down?
Until we get through litigation and they determine... We're trying to find an engineer that will specify what will need to be done. Up till now, all they have been willing to give us is on the roll-up doors to put in these, 8x12 steel beams inside the roll-up doors and then brace it.
Okay.
I don't know what can be done with the building.
Okay, so you don't know.
Up till now, no one has said, no one's willing to commit what needs to be done with
the building. Okay, so you don't know if the building is going to have to be demolished or if it can be repaired.
It may have to be demolished.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So what I've heard from you, it could cost anywhere between $500,000 and $1.2 million to repair this building. Yeah. Our
cost of repair is $1.5
million. Dennis Banks has suggested about $500,000.
$550,000, but that is not... He is suggesting not to take the tenant improvement out, which has a short porch slab, has cold joints in the bearing wall footings, and the warehouse slab will be 1 inch higher than the office floor. So whenever any trucks come in with snow or anything, it's going to melt and drain right into the office.
I got you. Now, there's been a whole lot of moving parts here. So did Banks Construction offer to purchase the property from you, or they did not offer to purchase the property?
They did not.
They did not.
Well, last week, their attorney sent us a deal saying, oh, well, now he's willing to purchase it for $1.5 million. Our attorney doesn't even know what that includes. It was exactly what you guys received. It's like three sentences. And he says, well, now Dennis Banks is willing to buy this, but our attorney doesn't know if that's a settlement with all the claims, because obviously there's claims against all the subs that did the work also. And, you know, the contractors board was moving ahead with this until Dennis Banks said, well, we've got to go through litigation. So the contractors board stopped, which I think is a ridiculous way to do things. Okay. So, you know.
Your contract included element for negotiation or negotiating settlement.
Arbitration.
So the contractors board stepped aside and you entered a mediation.
We're doing mediation, and then if that doesn't work, then we go to arbitration.
So where is the mediation today?
That on April 7th, we're supposed to go to a court-ordered mandatory where they're finally going to, the court is making it a requirement for all the insurance companies to actually attend. Up till now, some of the insurance companies come, some of their adjusters come, some don't. And so that's why the court got involved, and they're demanding that everyone get together.
So the building has not been occupied today?
No.
It's sitting vacant?
No. Because, like I said, the engineers were saying that it was a dangerous condition because the roll-up doors are actually failing.
Okay. Has there been a formal structural?
We actually have a picture of that. Would you?
Okay, now I have a follow-up question on this. Yeah. You said the engineer said that the building is unsafe. Has the building been red-tagged?
No.
It's not red-tagged?
No. I don't know who would red-tag it.
County inspectors would red-tag it.
Okay.
No county. No, sir.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. Has there been a formal structural engineer through the building?
Both.
Not the appraiser, but there's been formal structural engineer.
Madison Knepper's are structural engineers. So is Rimkus. Dennis, both of the cost of repairs that you have in front of you are prepared by structural engineers. And as I said, Dennis Banks, structural engineer, agrees that's a dangerous condition.
It seems to me at this point, if I may, Keith, the subject before us is not to evaluate the building particularly, or its usability or its structurability or any other things. Our mission here, if I understand it right today, is if this building were not able to be occupied, then will the county rebate a certain amount of the taxes during the time when the negotiations were taking place? Well, that's really the question before us, isn't it?
The question before you is they're asking for a refund of the property taxes paid on the building for the years 2015 and 2016.
Well, it's been unoccupied and in some form of litigation or discussion,
yes,
correct?
That's correct.
So it's not ours to find whether there's a default here or Dennis Banks or anything of that regard.
No.
Is the county comfortable in rebating $19,000 in taxes on a building that may or may not be occupiable?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that's accurate.
That's the simple drill down on this.
Yes.
Dean, do you have any comments for us on this part?
We shouldn't be talking.
I'm sorry to have you walking.
He needs exercise.
Dean Haymore, Story County Community Director and Building Official. This building was built under CMU with the licensed contractor with a third-party inspection firm that did the inspections as required per our department and sent those inspection forms into us during the construction. I issued the C of O when all the inspections were completed and everything else. And then approximately, I'm not sure, the stormwells probably have it dated 1 to 2 months or 3 months later, they brought to my attention some deficiencies. They asked me at that time to rescind this C of O, and I said, what are your deficiencies, early aging, early under some of this discussion? They sent me, I think, 1 or 2, sheets saying what their discrepancies they had found. They had not found or did a full investigation at that time. At that time, it was mentioned that there will be some litigation matters, probably on this building, if they can't find a situation to rectify it. At that time, as our general practices, if litigation is ever mentioned, then it goes through the district attorney's office. I contacted the district attorney's office, let the district attorney's office know that they wanted me to rescind the C of O, and I was instructed not to at this time. A lot of this information that they have provided you is more in-depth investigation in that I haven't seen or been privy to. They have brought it to my attention. I did go out to the building when they did expose some of the CMU walls, lintels, above the roll-up doors, and did look at some voids and some missing rebar. Over what you have is you have columns that carry up, and then the lintel is what goes over that door that could have been missed or not correctly engineered, which was part of the engineering requirements of the contractor. So there's a lot of different things, moving parts. At this point, I did not rescind the CO, and I have not been requested to red tag it. This is the first time I've heard in depth.
You know what? And let me stop you because I think that
I don't want to put the county in liability.
Just hold on. So I think the question is what Lance has here. That are you entitled to back taxes because of the not the litigation, not what each side is arguing. It's more that was this a inhabitable building that could be used during this portion of time, and should they be, if you want to add to that.
I don't think it's whether it's inhabitable or not, it's whether it has value or not, whether it's occupied or not.
Right, and that's what we were talking about as far as you're at the Board of Equalization, the value of the building. So do you have something to say about Lance's remarks as far as do you believe that that's an accurate statement? The value of the building at the time in 15 and 16, which the Stormos were allowed to come forward for the last 3 years before the board. The question of the defects that is still in litigation, I think really that is a different issue than the question that, the legal question that Mr. Gilman has asked regarding the value of the building during that time. Correct?
The question before the board is, did the building have no value due to these structural problems in 15 and 16 such that the assessor's valuation of the building was based on a mistaken premise? If it did have value, if it had no value, then I think their request for a refund is appropriately before you. If they had less value due to the structural defects, but still, let's say it's only worth half of what it was, then they could probably get half of their tax when he's back. But it's kind of a question of, was there value to the building in 2015 and 2016, despite the existence of what I think is acknowledged that there are problems with it?
The issue of the building came to your attention about 60 days after completion, Steve, after C of O? How long after C of O?
About 3 days after. There was a major rainstorm, and the water was running down the walls. I haven't shown you the pictures that she's given you inside the building. I mean, it was...
So you folks built the building for what purpose?
To lease it or sell it.
To lease or sell.
We're out in the dry area, and it was built in order for us to, to move our project forward. You're probably familiar with it out on USA Parkway.
So in theory, it seems to me that within 2 days of you obtaining your C of O, It was recognized that the building might not be leasable because it might not be safe for a tenant to move in.
Yeah.
So at that point, the building was put on hold
right.
while you have worked through the details. Is that correct?
And the discovery just becomes more and more major. And I might add that, you know, we went before the Board of Equalization, and they lowered the value of the building to $1 just so they could keep it on the tax rolls. The building has no value. For one thing, if, like I say, every engineer now has said that it is unsafe because the roll-up doors are at this point, you can go inside the building and look out through the CMU over the roll-up doors.
Well, I can't see leasing this building to a tenant in the face of probable structural defects.
Just a quick procedural thing. If, as you folks are talking, the recorders have a very hard time speaking if you aren't at the mic, please.
Did you want me to repeat anything?
No, I
will. Mr. Loomis, for us, for the commission to make a decision today for a refund on this, would that be a premature decision based on the fact that we don't know if there's any value to this property yet? Until after they've remedied whatever course they're going to take. If we find out that building must be demolished, then there's zero value to the building. But if it can be repaired and brought into compliance, then there is value to the property. So we could be jumping the gun today if we go ahead and decide to do it or to not do it, right? I mean,
I think one of the options that you can do here today is to delay a decision on it pending the outcome of whatever they're. And maybe they'll settle it on the 7th and decide where they're going to go with things. And that would give you a clearer idea, I think, as to the value of the building. Or you can make the decision today based on the information that's in front of you.
One thing I might add, though, is right now we paid taxes for 2 years on a building that had no value for 2 years until the repairs, even if we were willing to accept the shoddy repairs that Dennis Banks is, you know, attempting to get us to accept. The building still had no value for those 2 years because it couldn't be leased, it couldn't be sold. It had no value. And even Dennis Banks is saying, unless you go in and put in these giant beams and everything, and that we're willing to accept that repair, fine. But if they are saying, unless we're willing to do that, the building certainly, when we were paying taxes on it, had no value without repairs. No one could occupy that building. The roll-up doors are failing. The only thing holding the CMU above the roll-up doors is the roll-up door frames.
Okay. I'm going to ask the assessor to go ahead and come to the podium. So, Ms. Ed, exactly what point does Ms. Armo's building go under the tax roll?
I'm going to kind of explain because there's a lot of difference between taxable for tax purposes and appraisal for sale. Okay. Generally, we put things on the tax roll as it's built. July 1 is our lien date. This building happened to start in January and got a CFO in May, I believe it was. So as the assessors, we go out, we do our due diligence, we do our appraisal, and we put it on the tax roll. The assessor, my office, had absolutely no clue that there was any issues with this building until I received Ms. Stormo's Board of Equalization appeal this year. Now, that being stated, when we looked at all the appraisals, myself and our outside appraiser, Mark Stafford, that generally appraises our industrial area, this is an income-producing property, okay? When you appeal to the county boards and the state boards of equalization on an income-producing property, we do first a cost approach. That's how we came up with the value of this building. As it was, we thought it was built to standards and was occupiable. Now, when it comes down to this, it's an income-producing property. This property is not producing any income as it sits. There's value to the land, but there's no income coming in. So what we looked at originally was a salvage value. There's issues with this building. From the information that we've been giving, the appraisals that we were given, one of the appraisals said they figured that after everything was said and done, And I apologize, I cannot at this moment remember which appraisal it was because I don't have the information in front of me, said it was worth, after repairs and everything else, approximately $65,000, and that was to the building. Now, again, that is for sale. You're looking at everything. That's the aesthetics of the building. That is the, you know, the landscaping. As tax appraisers, we don't look at that. It is a base. It is a building. This is here. We look at what's left. We look at asphalt. We look at anything that could possibly be salvaged out of that building. We came up with approximately a $45,000 figure. I don't know the exact numbers. After our boards of equalization, and it was came out in the Stormo's presentation, that even at this point, even the asphalt is going to have to be pulled out because it's not set at a grade. It's set at a grade where all the water runs into the building. There was a lot of other things that came out in that appeal that after the fact, that was one of the reasons why the board came up with, they figured there was no value to the building. So again, what you have to look at is taxes, how taxes are assessed. And at this point, as an income-producing building, that building is not producing any income. So that being said, that's one of the reasons why I believe the county boards chose to put that building down to a dollar on the tax roll, showing that we didn't miss it. It's not something the assessors missed, but there's an issue with that property. Are there any questions?
Okay. I don't have any more questions. But don't go too far away.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ms.
We prepared packets for the commissioners, which have all that have lots of pictures in them for you. We also brought our album so that you can see more clearly what we faced 2 days after our certificate of occupancy. And it is the certificate of occupancy that kicks in, that puts your building on the tax rolls. And evidently that's all that's used for, because our building cannot be occupied. I do recall that when I was in Washoe County, we had rented a place for our business just off of Glendale. And the fire marshal came in and he says, you don't have emergency lighting down the hall. I give you 30 days to get that in there or I will pull your certificate of occupancy. Emergency lighting? I have a building where the doors, it's falling in. So I'm just question what the certificate of occupancy means. If it's just a thing to put me on the tax rolls, then it's there. We're there for a dollar. But it certainly doesn't mean that building can be occupied. And it doesn't mean that Dennis Banks gets to tear out half of the floor, make it an inch higher than our office. And the reason they're doing that is so they don't have to tear out the asphalt, which is higher than the interior grade of the floor. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
I don't know what to ask. It appears to me that from my position here, that this is a building that's not occupiable without retrofit. And I don't think we're in a position to decide whether 30% of it is usable or 5% of it or 90% of it. But it would be my take on this that I believe these folks need to run it to ground and bring the building up, whether Dennis Banks does it or whether they have to retrofit or tear it down. But I believe probably their request is justified in my mind for these last 24 months.
Thea, you have to wait. You want to weigh in on this, or are you good?
I think that this really is coming down to two different issues. The value, as we were talking about, versus a lawsuit that we're not involved in. So I think that if you believe that you can go forward based on the evidence that you've heard today, great. If you feel that you need more time to bring things together, you can continue it. So those are my recommendations.
All right. Why don't we open up for public comment? Anyone in here like to comment on this? Anyone wants to testify? Pat, do you have anything?
It's obviously a very complex situation, and there are a number of things I would be tempted to ask, but I think with, again, their ongoing litigation with banks and others, the fact that it hasn't been heard by either a mediator or an arbitrator, I'm going to exclude all that and let that process run its course as it should. That said, if you were looking for a specific recommendation, I believe Dean, just by a nod of the head, can confirm I know this building has never been occupied or used from an income gathering basis. We are talking $19,000 spread over 2 years. Staff recommendation would be to go ahead and approve it.
I think you just mentioned listening to Mr. Haymore's testimony, Ms. Seddon's testimony on this, and of course the Stormo's presentation on this. I'm gonna look to Commissioner Gilman to go ahead and make a motion on this because I think we're all leaning in the same direction. So,
is this for taxes for 2015 and 16? So, are you going to be coming back and asking for refund of taxes for 2017?
There are none. Board of Equalization had brought that down to $1 for the value of the improvements.
Mr. Chairman, this is actually for a refund for 2015-16, 2016-17, and the 2017-18 was taken care of at the Board of Equalization. They have not been charged. That valuation has been corrected already, so there will be nothing on that one.
Well, and with that in mind, as the Stormos were told at the Board of Equalization, that was not the proper venue to bring forward the 15 and 16 years, and that this is the proper venue under the statutes that Mr. Loomis has set forth. So that's why they're here today, because this is the proper venue to hear this testimony regarding these particular years.
I'll make the motion to approve the application for a refund of property taxes in the amount of $19,189.58 as requested by Stormo Investments, LLC.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved to second to approve the application for a refund of the property taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay.
Good luck.
Sure. Okay. Let's go ahead and let's recess for about 5 to 10 minutes.